Morning, Justin.
Morning, Mr. Mark.
How are you, sir?
I'm well.
Yeah?
I'm pretty well.
Really? I was going to say.
Is this going to be a recurring theme on the podcast?
I don't know.
My injuries?
I don't know.
Don't make me smile.
Yeah, Justin has a fat lip this morning from Ultimate over the weekend and a bruised nose, but he's looking good. He's looking good.
Who knew Ultimate Frisbee could be so dangerous to your health?
Yeah, the beauty of it is it wasn't like anybody else impacted you. You can honestly say I did this all by myself, practically.
Well, the ground did it to me.
The ground did it, yes. It was that zeal to catch the frisbee.
And I did not catch it.
But it was still impressive to see. It was an impressive dive. Yeah, but...
All right. We'll stop talking about Ultimate Frisbee someday, maybe.
Well, when Justin doesn't get battered or bruised, it's like, yeah, we definitely come in and it's like, this is a good thing this isn't a video, you know? We can come hobbling in and...
That's right.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll post a picture today of Bruce Dutton.
Welcome to How I See It with me, Mark Pratt, and...
Justin Sternberg. This is a podcast that works to counter cultural polarization through thoughtful conversations. Anyway, so today we're going to talk about something kind of interesting. We're going to talk about what we call user-friendly. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because when we first started talking about the idea, I was like, hey, maybe we should do a podcast episode on user-friendly and mm-hmm. how... Because if we haven't made it clear yet on this podcast, Mark has an aversion to tech and software.
I am having less aversion.
Okay.
As I do, I'm learning.
Ironically, I'm having more. So. Just kidding. Well, sort of. Maybe. I don't know. As I get older, I definitely have, you know, the aversion grows. But the point was, one of the reasons mm-hmm. that you discussed was like, things are just so, don't make sense.
Yeah, I can just remember vividly, you know, and I think how I see it is impacted, but I can remember mm-hmm. vividly growing up, and I was actually at my uncle's one time and playing, you know, a game, which was okay, and I got too zealous, you know, with the keyboard, and he came up behind me and smacked me in the back of the head. And said, you know, don't use it so hard. And it's like, I didn't even really think about it. But, I mean, I'll be honest. That, it's like, heck, if you can't play on this thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I grew up, even in the beginning of that era, it's like, you know, don't play with it. Mm-hmm. You know, because you're going to break it.
Yeah.
It's something fragile. You know, and I can remember even early on just being able to... have that fear of if you push the wrong button in the wrong order, something's gonna lock up, you know, you know, so
yeah,
that's where that comes from for me.
So your earliest memory is a computer smacking you.
Again, smacked, yeah, because I was using it too hard, and it's like, heck, and I'll be honest, you know, so much of the tools that I use today, it's like, I use them hard.
Yeah.
And I expect a tool to be able to be used hard.
Take a beating, yeah.
Exactly. And still work, you know? I don't, you know, so I think that's, it's just kind of, that has become a, to where I really do respect, you know, like my iPhone, something, not mm-hmm. that that's a, but, you know, it's like the things that it does, it makes sense and it's user friendly. To be able to say, okay, it's kind of intuitive, if you will. Mm-hmm. But how's that for us?
Intuitive.
Yeah.
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 And that's, so, interestingly enough, so when we were talking about it, it's like, I could go on for hours talking about this because I'm actually a software developer. So, and a big part of my role in my job is to make sure things, our software is user-friendly.
Yes.
And, ironically, it's interesting because as we were talking, you're like, yeah, I think user-friendly can also be this. And you started to describe this other version of user-friendly that I was like, that's interesting. It doesn't, for me, it's like a different world from what I see user-friendly. I think buttons and positioning and software and that kind of thing.
Sure.
And I thought that was, it was really fascinating. So I want to hear a little bit more about what you were thinking. You're like, user-friendly is also this. Can you describe a little bit about what,
what
we're talking about?
And I think it just comes down to a how I see it type thing, you know, from the in the difference between you and I. But when I think of user friendly, it's kind of irony. I'll be honest. It's not a positive type term, but I understand that user friendly.
Can I pause real quick?
Of course.
When you're saying that. Are you referring to like the software, like computer side of user friendly? Or are you talking about outside of that world?
I'm talking about outside.
Carry on.
Yeah. From my perspective on what you were talking about from a user friendly, I think there are people, okay, who tend to allow themselves, not always intentionally, but more out of patterns and cycles. They tend to allow themselves or set themselves up to be used by other people. So in many cases, those people are user friendly. They set themselves up to be used by people. And there again, I don't see it as a positive dynamic. But yeah, and you know, we have other names for it. You know, it could be called codependent, you know, those kind of things, you know, from a, you know, therapeutic world. But it was interesting in the, on that morning when we were talking about that, just that the difference that our views had of that one word. I respect it from a computer type dynamic, but I also recognize that it happens in a personal type dynamic as well, that there are people. And for me, I think part of that comes from, you know, what is my role? What is my purpose, if you will? And I think, you know, so much of that, and we can put this link in. A lot of, have you ever heard of love languages?
Yes.
Yes.
Well,
Gary Chapman.
Yeah, I think when you say that, I always hear five love languages.
Sure, but sure. Yes, the five love languages, sure. And we don't have to go in, not that we couldn't, but like you say, it becomes, and I like the use of the word language, because I think when we understand other people's language, it's easier to communicate with them.
Yeah.
And if I don't, if you're speaking a foreign language to me and I don't know you're speaking a foreign language to me, in other words, it can kind of even be like the technological aspect.
Yeah, I was just,
Go ahead.
Well, I think you're right. Well, in there's a couple different parts to that, right? There is the person speaking and whether they're speaking a different language, right?
Sure.
And then there's the person hearing and whether they're hearing what the person's speaking. Right?
Sure.
Like there's two sides of that. And that ties into love languages and you know, psychology as much as it does computers and that whole idea of like, sometimes you design something and you think this is easy. It makes sense. You click the button and you get to the thing and they're thinking the thing should just be there, right? And so they don't click the button. They're scared of the button. The button might smack them in the back of the head, right? So they want it to just be there. And you're like, it's so easy. What's wrong with you, right? And it gets lost in translation. And, and yet, this is the big problem with user friendliness on the internet or the computers, whatever software. Essentially, we try to stick with convention because even though we think something might be better or more intuitive, often it introduces confusion and frustration if it's not the status quo, right?
Sure.
That's how it's called a hamburger menu. So that the little three lines on a mobile phone that represent click this to show a menu.
Yep.
We call that, those three lines, we call it the hamburger menu because
you know,
bun and meat in the middle, whatever. I don't know where that originates.
I just always go there when I don't know what I'm supposed to do next.
You pull up the hamburger menu, Mark. Yeah.
I didn't even realize. See, that's user-friendly.
It is user-friendly. What's interesting about that is, like, it didn't start user-friendly. It was three lines in a corner of your screen. Like, why would that represent a menu? Of course, you know, three lines represents maybe three items in a menu. Whatever. Yeah. But at some point, user experience experts determine this is not the best way to represent a menu. We should just have a word that says menu in a circle or whatever. But it didn't stick. People were looking for the hamburger.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? Because you get these conventions. And so we're always trying to make things intuitive. Sometimes trying to break conventions. Sometimes recognizing that doesn't work. It's just the translation part is so difficult. And then you might hit the nail on the head for 90% of your users, but 10% of them are irate and they leave and they're so angry you made that change. And it's like, well, I think it was a good thing, but it sure feels bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
Tie that back in, Mark. Come
no,
on.
No, I'm happy to. I think the difference, okay, is I don't think our menu as people or individuals is so readily accessible as it is on our phone screen. You follow me? And I think a lot of it comes down to self-awareness, knowing who I am, knowing, you know, and I hear again, I'll come back to the languages piece, because I, like you were saying about technology advancing to a certain degree, I think part of that, I'm trying to tie it together.
Comes if it breaks apart, it's okay.
Well, part of it is I see who I am with my love language. Mm-hmm. I'm the epicenter of normal. Mm-hmm. Okay? The way I love is normal. Mm-hmm. Okay? It's what I'm used to.
I mean, I don't think you're that normal, Mark.
But... Well, and I'm not. I'll put those air quotes around it that we do here.
Yeah. Maybe that'll be in the picture. My nose with the scar and us doing air quotes.
But from my perspective, I'm normal.
Yeah.
From my perspective of you, if you're something different,
right,
then you're the one that's weird or strange. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where we get lost in sometimes our polarization. Because instead of you being different and me being able to value and learn from that, I tend to see you as wrong. Mm-hmm. And love languages is a great analogy, because we can say, okay, no, you're just speaking a different language. And we can look at language and we can respect people who are bilingual, mm-hmm, or know more than one language, mm-hmm, you know, because it almost has a sound of intelligence to it or experience to it. So, you know, in that process, we can recognize that, yeah, languages can be respected.
Yeah.
And even with their differences. Mm-hmm. And I think I bring the five love languages up because, you know, most people are aware of them.
Yeah. Can you give, maybe not all five, but even just one, right?
Sure. Sure.
So like that, cause there might be some that aren't aware of it. And so sure. Like, well, what's a love language?
Yeah. A love language. There's five of them. I'm going to go with quality time. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a person you don't necessarily have to do much with them. Mm-hmm. But they want your presence.
They like the adjacentness, right?
Yes, yeah, they want to know that you like being with them. Mm-hmm. You want to be their companion. Mm-hmm. It's not about what you do. Mm-hmm. It's about the fact that you are willing to join them in just join them.
Right.
Okay?
They could be making a sandwich for the kids and you standing there would be depositing in their emotional being.
Sure.
Right.
Yep. And I think you bring up a good example, okay, in that process, your companionship, but another one would be acts of service, mm-hmm, which if I'm making this sandwich, mm-hmm, you know, for you, that's an act of service.
Right.
So So that's another love language. You're going to have to give me your fingers. Quality gifts. Time. Yep, gifts. I'm gifts. Just trying to
yep.
not... Oh,
don't we don't have your... to do them all, but, yeah, but just some examples
gifts,
even.
Gifts is another one. Small gifts even. Can mm-hmm. It could be a pebble that you pick up or a piece of, you know, a special rock that you pick up someplace else that says, hey, I was thinking of you in this moment. It's mm-hmm. not, you know, always diamond rings. I'm sure they're helpful too.
Yeah.
But, but it's that aspect that I was thinking of you. Yep. Okay.
It's and a token of my thought yeah, about you. Yeah.
Just to confirm that even though we're apart, you were mm-hmm. still on my mind.
Yeah. And one thing I really like about that whole book and its thoughts is that everyone has these love languages. Some yep. speak one of them more fluently than others, but they might have some variations, right? Like,
sure.
if I recall. But what happens... right, is when we love that way, we often, with that, when we don't examine how we are,
uh-huh.
we often expect love that
yeah.
way. And so we, if our highest version of love to us is gifts, giving,
sure.
then it's very likely that the people we love, we will give them gifts.
That's to correct.
Show our token of love, right?
Yep, because it's important to us.
Yes.
And it may be completely mistranslated.
Mm-hmm.
Because that person may have the language of physical touch.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm giving them a gift mm-hmm. and they're looking at me and saying,
buying you off.
Yeah. So you what's this for?
Yeah.
What's this for? And yeah. you know, it, and there again, it gets lost in the translation because I've just given a gift based on my language to someone whose language is physical touch.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking for a hug. They're looking for me to put my arm or rub their back or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's just, that's how they're designed. And mm-hmm. and physical touch is different than quality time, even though we might be able to be together. Mm-hmm. You know, it just, there's these nuances mm-hmm. like language, you know, that we're not often aware of. So it gets lost in the translation. So, and I think that's where I come back to. In that process of the love languages, there's a book called How We Love.
Hmm.
And that refers to love styles. Okay? And I say that based on the fact that it's brought up, or it's the premise for it is out of attachment theory.
Hmm.
Okay? So attachment theory is, from my perspective, huge when... we're especially talking about kids, you know, and I think, you know, everybody's heard of RAD, you know, reactive attachment disorders or something. No. Okay.
Nope, not heard of RAD.
RAD.
I mean, I've heard the word RAD.
Okay. RAD, mm-hmm. reactive attachment disorder. So what happens with kids, especially, well, and this is where I come from, foster kids, kids who have experienced abandonment,
mm.
those kind of things, okay? The name, when somebody is on that far perimeter of, you know, having been almost abused or abandoned,
mm.
okay? So what looks as if it is secure, okay, to you and I, or so, it's become mistranslated to that child, and therefore in that security, they can become reactive because it's different than the abandonment or what they experienced as love. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to use, I'm not describing anyone, only a circumstance, okay? Mm-hmm. So a child who grew up in this chaotic environment, okay, and then they are removed from their home and taken into a hopefully, you know, secure environment.
Mm-hmm. Healthy.
Healthy. It will be very difficult for yeah. them to adjust.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it's not user friendly.
Yes, precisely.
Mm-hmm.
It's anything but.
Yeah.
And I don't always know how to make that transition.
Yeah.
From chaotic to secure.
Mm.
And that's where attachment styles comes into play. because there's this process. Okay, I want to try and make this. It's important to understand. Okay, there's intrinsic memory. Okay, so before I have language, okay, my memory is intrinsic. It's in there, but it's wired. You follow me? It's like a foundational dynamic that I operate off of, but I couldn't necessarily describe it to you because it was developed before I had language.
So it's similar to that kind of instinct, like instinct.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Great analogy. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So after I develop language, my memory becomes extrinsic. Mm-hmm. So that's why, you know, most people have a difficult time remembering early childhood, those kind of things, because there was no language to compartmentalize and file it. Mm. Okay, does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And that's why even, but prior to language, there's so much bonding that happens with children and parents. You follow me? Especially, I'll just be honest, especially, you know, what comes to mind for me is like the nursing process.
Yeah.
Because there's this whole hormonal biochemical process that goes along with that nursing, with that mother nursing her child. There's this eye-to-eye contact. There's this close proximity.
There's touch.
Yes. Yeah. There's smell.
Transferring. Yes.
Yeah, so exactly. Wow. Yeah. Oh, there's all, and it, there again, all the five senses are back in our primary function. Mm. So those things, so when we experience trauma.
To pause real quick.
Yeah.
The only other time where we have that close of an experience as humans is sex.
True.
We're also transferring, we're connecting, we're all those things. And just think about how transformational that experience is.
Yeah.
And I mean, not to be crude, but just thinking about how fascinating those two elements are in terms of the connection, right? And the bonds that are generated and created. Yeah.
Yeah. I have no problem with you going there in that process of understanding where this user-friendly dynamic can come from. Because if we want to translate that from early childhood into adulthood, okay, not to be crude again, but people who tend to be user-friendly are going to traffic in the realm of sex.
Yep.
You follow me? So I'm just using you to meet my need. Mm-hmm. You follow me? And here again, not a desire to be crude, but a desire to understand where this user friendliness comes from. It's this desire to have this connection, and yet it's empty, or it doesn't fill the void that I'm looking to fill. Does that make sense? So when we look at that user friendly across the board, so I'm going to come back to that attachment style in such a way that says, okay, I'm going to break it down to need. Okay. We were just talking about the nursing child. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we have this process. I have this experience in the back of my brain. It's basically where flight or fight mechanisms come from.
Okay.
Okay. It's called primary function. Mm-hmm. And that's where all my senses are tied in. Mm. So if we take it back to adulthood, the person who experiences PTSD, a near-death circumstance, okay? What they, after that moment of near-death, okay, all in that moment, I should say, of near-death, all those five senses that we just described in the nursing child are still activated. So my hearing, my smell, my sight are all connected to this part of my brain that's very strong and designed to keep me alive. It's very strong, but it's not necessarily very smart. You follow me? So when I smell that same smell, when I hear that same sound, that part of my brain goes into goes to work basically trying to keep me alive. Mm-hmm. And that's the same as in that child, as it is the adult, you know, the soldier, as it is the rape victim, mm-hmm. those kind of things. This is how we're wired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it works both ways, where I think, if I understand you correctly, the PTS experience triggers something strongly there, to where anytime that thing is re-represented.
Sure.
So a sound for
fireworks PTSD, at the 4th exactly. of July. Yeah. Sure. Fireworks at the 4th of July. It's that part of my brain says explosion, loud noises. It's like, I'm here. And see, that's the thing with trauma. Trauma never sits down on the timeline. Mm. You follow me? We can talk about things in a timeline. When I went to kindergarten, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. When I went to first grade, da-da, timeline. But any moment that I experienced a trauma on that timeline, it won't sit down. Mm. So whenever I experience that, that's why we have what we call triggers. Mm-hmm. Okay, so whenever I experience that, and you talk with people about it, they'll say, it was like it just happened. Yeah. That's why. Mm. It never sits down on the timeline. Yeah. And it's like it just happened. Mm-hmm. Because that part of my brain has been wired to keep me alive. Mm-hmm. And therefore, when I hear that sound, when I smell that smell, and I just have such an appreciation for our senses when I talk with people who have been abused, mm-hmm. and the things that they tell me that trigger them, you know, the smell of men's cologne, the sound of a car door shutting, you know, mm-hmm. screeching tires, these kind of things. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm amazed at how, in tune our senses are to be able to pick up on these things all the time. And yet we're not overwhelmed in the moment,
right?
But yet it's all still recorded to a degree. Yeah. It's got a soundtrack, you know, that kind of. So I don't want to get too far off the subject.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, pause.
Question. Pause.
I think partly too, like, that it goes both ways in the sense of trauma and like PTSD type of thing, but also the comfort side of things, like kind of like what you're saying about that nursing experience. And when something brings you back to a place of comfort, we can tend to latch on to it. It's not the inverse, right?
Yes.
And that's kind of where some addictions can start. We talk about user-friendly and looking for love in all the wrong places, that kind of thing.
Yep.
We're seeing a connection to something that brought us comfort, and so we're chasing it. And then it, you know, it's like you said, it continues to fall short. But in the short term,
sure.
It's connecting that dot to that place in our brain that says, hey, this means this. Okay, get it.
you know?
Right?
Yes.
Or vice versa with traumas. This means this. Run. Right?
Right.
It's that fight or flight, I guess, right?
It's a fight or flight type mechanism.
Attachment.
Because and here again, I'm going to come back to that in that process. Because as I mentioned, primary function is strong but not real smart.
Yeah.
Executive function, okay, if I can keep that online, okay, that's smart but not real strong. Mm. So my executive function can be overridden by my fear, by my flight or fight mechanism. But if I can continue to keep my executive function online, I can say, oh, that's right, today's the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. It's not the same as that. You follow me? And it becomes part of the learning that needs to take place to be able to understand and kind of combat some of that primary function that goes on. But I think what happens is we have to be able to recognize that there is that connection, to be able to recognize when I'm losing it and what I need to do. Mm. And I guess I just feeling a desire to be sensitive to anybody that, you know, has experienced trauma. I'm not trying to make this light. This is just kind of a schematic of how I see it, you know. So when I'm talking about people smelling things, I don't want to trigger anybody, but I mean, we're talking about this in a schematic process.
Okay.
Just sensitivity to that. And then, so here we go. I'm going to come back to attachment. Okay. So in that, how we love, okay, everyone has needs. Every child. There is no perfect parent from my perspective. God's the only perfect parent, okay? So no matter how well I parent, I am not going to be able to meet all of the needs of my children. No offense to you, you will not be able to meet.
How dare you?
Exactly. And I, you know, and so often, you know, in my world of sorts, I understand where it's come from. You know, we want to blame at times. The desire is to blame something on my parents. You know, they made me. No, that's not where I'm going. That's not where Mark Pratt comes from. Okay. We're adults now. We've had this experience. And now it's time for me to take responsibility for what is mine. Okay. Because my parents were imperfect people, just like I'm going to be an imperfect parent as well. And I think, you know, so I'm not, this isn't about blame, but we all come out of this experience with these unmet needs. Okay, so I'm going to break it down to kind of, if you picture a need, I draw a circle at the top with need in there, and then I bring two lines down to my right and to my left. Okay, so if my need is answered with a yes, routinely yes, okay, below that yes, I draw another line with a circle that would kind of represent security or the ability to explore and learn. So picture a toddler, okay? Your toddler even. You're growing up, you're routinely in a safe environment. You see them kind of, they've gained their mobility. You've seen them kind of amble out of the room and you kind of stay where you are, but you're aware, and suddenly you kind of see them meander back. Okay. Now, if they come running back, if you hear a loud bang, they may come running back. You follow me? Mm-hmm. Because what they're doing is they're learning to develop security. They're being able to go off on their own. The world's a safe environment that you've provided kind of within your home. They're able to go explore, and then they come back. Now, if something happens while they're out there, the world may be defined a little differently. Because now, oh my goodness, this is an unsafe place. So like when we transition to daycare. Okay, this is foreign, this is unusual, so there's going to be some crying and gnashing of teeth, if you will, that basically says, I don't like this, this doesn't feel secure, this is change. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So that's what we're talking about, is this secure attachment. Now, if we go over to the other side, where we've come down from needs, there's a circle, I'd write a circle there, where the instead of yes, the answer is no, okay? Well, no becomes a little more complicated because no can be answered one of two ways. It's either, routinely, there's a word for it. It's either consistently no or inconsistently no. You follow me?
Yeah.
You're already tracking with me.
Yeah.
Okay. So if the no is consistent, okay, then I'm going to likely grow up avoidant because there's no need to go to that parent structure, if you will, because my needs are just overwhelming them. Whether they are caught up in their own substance abuse, whether they just are overwhelmed by work or, you know, single parenthood, you know, it's like there just isn't enough bandwidth to be able to meet the need of a child because I'm just struggling to meet my own needs. Mm-hmm. Okay? There's a variety of dynamics where it could be consistently no. Mm-hmm. But typically, that individual, that child, is going to learn to circumvent that desire to need because there's no purpose there.
Right.
You follow me?
Yep.
So they're going to avoid going to that person. Okay?
When you have a need, you avoid.
Yes.
The quote-unquote source.
Yeah. You avoid and you learn, and you basically learn to entertain yourself or do it on your own type thing. Pull myself up by my own bootstraps type thing. You follow me?
Yep.
When we go over to the other part of no that is inconsistent, Okay, we can recognize how that has its own set of dynamics as well. Typically, that child is typically having to perceive when is a good time because they don't necessarily know. So they have to kind of, if you will, read the tea leaves of the moment and say, okay, is now a good time or is now not a good time? Okay, oh, I've seen that look before. I'm not asking now. Oh, okay. Dad came home, gave mom a hug. Now might be a good time. Okay, and I'm not saying it's always that simple, but it's in. So the inconsistent, okay, tends to lead to anxiousness. You follow me? Because I'm never quite sure. I'm the opposite of secure. I'm anxious and I'm having to kind of perceive what's going on. When couples are having issues with communication, there we go with air quotes again. It's going to be likely around that because I've learned to perceive your tone, your body language more than I'm respecting or hearing the words you're using. Or the words, the body language and tone are incongruent with the words you're using. So therefore, I'm going to automatically go with my perception over what you're saying. You follow me? Does that make sense?
It does, yeah.
So that's where this is the foundation, okay? But if we take those different the level of security, the avoidant, and we take the anxious or clingy would be some terminology that people might use. There, the premise between and how we love is that we would develop five love styles, okay?
Out of that
Out of
paradigm.
that. And I'll just start kind of with the order. Avoider is going to be one of those love styles. Pleaser is going to be another love style. Vacillator is going to be a third love style. And then you're going to have victim and controller or controller and victim as another love style. Not grouped together, but their own individual ones. Two ends of a spectrum, if you will. Okay. So the premise becomes that each person, and it's not that like love languages, which we tend to understand, it's not that a person is just one or the other, but you're gonna have a leaning towards one of those styles. Are you gonna have another little like Enneagrams would call wings or yes, it's very possible. Okay, so I'm gonna just give a real quick synopsis of each style. So the avoider, okay, we can picture what they grew up in. Okay, now the avoider isn't necessarily looking to avoid people, the avoider is looking to avoid emotion. Okay, now you think about it in that process of, well, if I may, I'm not you specifically, but I think IT guy comes to mind. Okay. It's not about feelings and emotions. It's about facts. What do you need, in a that I can fix? What can I fix for you? What's broken? No, I don't want to know how you feel about it. I just want to know what I can fix. What's wrong? And see, the avoider, when we think about what they grew up in, it's easy to see that they learn to grow up entertaining themselves. So their lens, if you will, tends to look at things from a pragmatic perspective. Okay? So in relationship, they can tend to look at that person that has a need coming to them and saying, are you kidding me? Why can't you just entertain yourself like I entertain myself? You follow me? That's the lens that person has. Not that it can't change, not that there isn't room to, but that's the premise behind their love style. Okay? Does that make sense
It
as an
does, yeah.
avoider? Okay. And that's I'll leave it at that. But there's a lot more to it, but
Yeah.
for the sake of
It
time
makes
and
sense in that I'm like,
yeah.
scratching my
And
chin,
we can
yeah.
all recognize that emotions can be difficult. It's not like they have handles. problems typically have handles. Yeah. I go here, I grab a hold of this, I move this to there, like a puzzle. Mm-hmm. I know how to put it together. Mm-hmm. Emotions don't always have that. They're a little more nebulous.
Yeah, I mean, and the same emotion can come from two different positions, right? So,
right.
And so and solving the emotion with that came from this can be disastrous if the emotion, the same emotion came from this direction, right?
Sure. Yeah. And that and that's kind of that that process of, here again, it's about learning. I grew up learning that emotions were kind of this dangerous place.
Yeah.
You follow me? Yeah. Because when I brought my emotion to that person that couldn't meet that need, it just got worse. It became more chaotic.
Yeah.
You follow? So emotions, yeah. Who needs those? But that's what's at the basis of that. Mm. When we think about attachment style, can I come to you with this need or this desire? You know, need is kind of sometimes, I'm not going there, but you know, we can, well, it's not like air and it's not like, mm-hmm. you know, food and water or shelter type thing. But no, in some ways this, we're talking about attachment. So what I need to attach. Either way, coming back to pleaser. The pleaser is just like it is. And, you know, it comes back to that point of, I want to please you. I want you to think I'm a nice guy. And therefore, I'm going to treat you like I'd like to be treated. And my expectation is that you will treat me the same way. Okay? And so when we think about pleaser, their desire is to please. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, a pleaser may not always be, when I think of pleasers, ultimately I think of contractors, okay? Mm-hmm. From my perspective, it's very difficult for a contractor to say no. they will routinely say, yes, I can do that. Yes, I can do that. Yes, I can do that. Oh, yes, I can be there in 2 weeks. Yes, I can be there tomorrow. And the process becomes eventually that tends to lead towards, not that they're dishonest, but my overcommitment and saying yes to everyone to please them tends to lead to dishonesty. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, somebody gets a no. Mm-hmm. Whether I wanted to or not, they get a no. You follow me?
Yep.
And it's just about that desire. And here again, this is at times what, and pleasers are another one of those individuals who are going to be continually perceiving. Mm-hmm. You follow me? Because that's how they know mm-hmm. what the right answer is. Mm-hmm. They kind of follow the trail. And okay, I've seen that look. That means you're pleased with me. I'll continue in that vein. When in some ways, maybe I should take a left instead of going right where, you know, I think you want me to go, because that's actually counter to who I am. Mm-hmm. This is where we start to set up that user-friendly dynamic.
Yeah.
Because I'm putting myself in that position to create that desire, mm-hmm. to meet that need within me of pleasing you. Mm-hmm. You follow me?
Yeah.
And that becomes the lens that I tend to look at life through. Making sense? So what my desire is to just be kind to other people and hoping they will be kind to me, because that's what makes sense. And I'm not always the pleaser, just like the avoider isn't necessarily always in touch with their emotion and won't have a really good emotional vocabulary to even describe how they feel. Okay, the pleaser will tend to operate out of that perception and will tend to think maybe more in their own mind before they are actually even communicating it. Does it make sense in that?
Yep.
So as we think about these different styles relating to one another, it becomes very similar to love languages. Mm-hmm. And it sets people up sometimes in that anxiety to be user-friendly.
Yeah.
In a quote-unquote type mm-hmm. world. Mm-hmm. The next one is vacillator. Vacillators vacillators tend to be intense people, okay? And what happens is, you think of vacillator, I think of the sine wave, you know,
yeah.
roller coaster.
Yeah. Okay.
Roller coaster is how it'll typically be described, you know, because a vacillator, it is vacillators have this ability to create expectations in their own mind. Okay. But the problem becomes it's never as good as they thought it would be. They have elevated it in their mind to the point that we're going to do this. We went to the zoo. Think of a child, okay? We went to the zoo. That was a wonderful experience. Everybody was laughing. There was cotton candy. There was, you know, and we were talking, and you know, there was these smells in the air, and it was just wonderful. So can we go to the zoo again tomorrow? No, you ungrateful child. What's the matter with you? You think money grows on trees? You know, that becomes, but yet there was such. And when we think about sexual relationships, you know, those kind of things, this attachment, there's this tremendous desire for closeness and attachment. Okay?
And Mark's got his hand in the air and like the top of a roller coaster as he's
Exactly.
describing
That's
this.
where those expectations have
Right.
gone.
It's like
Okay?
ching, 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 ching at the
Yeah.
top of
And
the.
it's like that. It's like one block builds on top of another. Oh, and then we can do this. And then if we did this, and wow,
And the
that would be
excitement's building, the expectations building.
exactly. All in that person's mind
Intensity.
because it's not always necessarily communicated.
Right.
Okay? This is what makes vacillators wonderful visionaries. They can be tremendous visionaries to be able to say, okay, what if we did this and we did this, and then if we did this and that. That would be amazing. You follow me? And in a from a business type perspective, we can recognize that person could have tremendous value. The problem in your relationship tends to be, okay, my expectation wasn't met. So now what happens? I plummet. Okay, that's the vacillator. So it's rarely as good as I expect it to be, but it's rarely as bad as I think it is. You follow me? And that's so the vacillator, yes,
Overreaction.
because we can't go to the zoo every day. But yet that in my heart, that's my desire. And we can understand how that makes it difficult for that person as an adult going, I have these expectations and I have these goals, I have these dreams, these visions, but yet I never seem to quite make it. And it's difficult for the vacillator if they get to 75%, okay? You know, they just didn't make it. So at that point, if I'm only at 75%, I'm a loser. When in reality, no, you hit 75%. That might even be 25% higher than the average person would get to. You've exceeded a level that is quote unquote normal. You've exceeded your peers, but yet it's not as good
Right, as you imagined,
as you imagined it would be.
And what's interesting too is that I think there can be a tendency to that height to be envisioned to be higher each time, right? So it's like last time we went to the zoo, and you package your memories in this ideal format. You forget the part where you threw up in the trash can, you know, you forget the part where you dropped your ice cream cone on the ground, right? And you only remember the good things, and you're like, it's gonna be that plus this other thing I'm gonna do. And the heights just get higher and higher and higher. So now 75%, you reach 75%, you're disappointed, but you're still 25% higher than the last time you went, right? Like, there's
It
that
becomes
too.
idealized, yes, in our minds, to where ideally we could do this, this, and this. And so that becomes the work in some ways for the vacillator, is to be able to find this, okay, yeah,
Contentment.
this contentment, and to be able to minimize the highs and the lows, because my success doesn't define who I am. Okay,
And failure isn't a travesty.
yeah, I'm not worthless because I've failed. No, I'm learning how to do things differently, and failure is part of that process. And we can understand how over time that person may tend to head towards depression or, you know, those kind of things, because it's like, well, crap, why bother? If I can't do it at that level, why bother? No, that's not always the case. So is that making sense? That,
yeah,
that,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And left unchecked or started in a really unhealthy manner is probably what contributes to some bipolar disorder. Mm. Is that right or no?
I'm thinking I'm bipolar because I'm my one of my pet peeves is our misuse of the terminology based on diagnosis. Okay, that's where
this is a polarizing topic, Mark.
It is when because we tend to
irony of the word
we bipolar. Tend to yes, for me it's like I think of, you know, brain chemistry and how a person tends to experience, you know, this manic state, and then they go to major depression, you know, on a, we can kind of almost schedule it. We know that cycle, you know, that is tending to be bipolar. You follow me from a brain chemistry point of view. We can kind of recognize, okay, I'm coming into my manic stage and I'm about to crash into my major depression. That's how I view bipolar. But bipolar has also become what I would describe as emotionally reactive. So a person who comes into a circumstance or experiences something and suddenly becomes mad is not technically bipolar.
Gotcha.
Because it's circumstantial.
Right.
But that abrupt anger or rise, and then the fall that comes after that, the you know, I'm sorry, I didn't, you know, da 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 da, you know, if you will, the abuser. You know, that high anger, that, no, that's emotionally react, that's emotional reactivity,
right?
Not bipolar.
Gotcha.
That's my theoretically.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
And that's, yeah.
Thank you.
No problem. Because we do that. Narcissism is another word. It's basically a selfish, it's come to represent a selfish man.
Yeah.
But, you know, narcissism.
Well, then I'm a narcissist.
Exactly.
Yeah. Selfish man. Also a little narcissistic. I do like talking about myself, Mark.
Well, there you go. And then take it for what it's worth. You know, and that's where the cultural definition versus the theoretical definition. That's kind of where I just tend to traffic in. Yeah, that's...
So how many love languages have you hit so far? Three, right?
Three out of five, yes.
And it's... Avoider?
Yep.
The needy, except you had another word for it.
Yeah. When we think of, I think when I think of the Bible, I think of the difference between Martha and Mary.
Yeah. Like
okay.
The server.
Well, and there's a difference between being a peacekeeper and a peacemaker. I see pleasers as then that's the person that as the peacekeeper.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily wanting to make it, they just want to keep it. You follow me?
Uh-huh.
They want everything to be happy. Everybody needs to be happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind.
Yeah.
And we don't necessarily want to deal
it's
with
like
the issue.
It's like a maintenance, not a fixing. Like, right?
Status quo.
Right. Yeah.
Sure.
So you got avoider, you got pleaser. And then vacillator.
Right? Yes.
All right. And then there's, you said two more?
Yeah.
All right.
And I'm, and those ones for the sake of our time will be probably a little quicker in the process of controller and victim. Okay. They're basically two ends of the same spectrum. The controller grew up in that chaos. So did the victim. Okay. The difference is what they took out of it. Okay. So the victim will basically say, yeah, I deserve that. It's my fault. And they take on. So when you can see a pleaser that grew up in a victim, you know, that pleaser, they're going to tend towards that user-friendly dynamic. It's my fault. Okay. Yes. I deserve to be hit. I made you mad. No, that's not even close. That's not even accurate.
Mm-hmm.
You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
And then the controller. Now, a controller will tend to use anger to motivate people. Okay? Because their desire is to be. So either I'll use my anger to move you in the direction I want you to move, or to just get you out of my life.
Yeah.
One or the other. And it's about that control, because I grew up in this, in my mind, I grew up in this chaos, and I'm not going back there. So therefore, I will control most, strive to control most things that, which are people in my life, and I'll typically use anger to do it.
Yeah. We talked about this a little bit in the Power Powerless episode, the idea that, you know, they grew up, like you said, in a chaotic environment, and power represented being on top of the food chain, and so that they're going to claw their way to the top no matter what, because that represents safety to them.
That's exactly right. That's what, where exactly the victim
safety represents lying dead on the floor, or like you know, playing dead kind of thing.
And I'll typically, I quite often use safety, because so often safety is a learned mechanism. Safety isn't always synonymous with healthy. You follow me?
Yeah.
So I have to relearn what healthy relationship is to avoid the user-friendly dynamic. And I have to relearn what control is to have healthy reciprocal relationship. To where my anger can motivate, but it's out of a righteous motivation, a desire to see change in a way that makes it better, not just my way. I want to promote revolution in a positive dynamic that offers freedom, and I use my anger in that way. Not in a way that offers or creates bondage for someone else to fear my, and, out of fear. Bondage is a good, yeah. So like you say, that's love styles. I can put a link there. And I actually, when we do this, I'll put a link. They have a love styles test that you can go in and you answer 15 questions. And, you know, and people can do that, and they can research more of, you know, of love styles. Because I think when we understand our love style, it helps me understand myself and other people.
Yeah.
So I learned that I have a positive and a negative dynamic to that desire to please, to that, you know, that up and down to, I'm a, you know,
It's speaking of, you know, polarizing topics, like personality quizzes, stuff like that. They all kind of, they can be polarized in the sense of like, don't peg me. We've talked about that.
Exactly.
Like, don't pigeonhole. And we also use the word spectrum a lot.
Yeah.
And we use perspective a lot. And the whole point of those tests, the love style tests, is to give you a better sense of your perspective.
Yes, right? They're a tool.
A tool, exactly. And I think they can become polarized when we're worried that they're predictive or attempting to be predictive, and you think you can peg me or whatever. They're not most of the good ones, and at least the people who use them properly, that's not the intention. The intention is better understanding and better perspective. Not insight. Not my view, but how you see it, Mark.
Exactly.
You know, and I'm able to recognize how I see it affects how I think you see it.
Exactly.
But you don't see it how I think you see it. And that's where conversation and relationship.
Exactly.
And grace and...
But the interesting part of that is when I understand who I am and I understand who you are, I'm better able to understand the cycle that our relationship creates.
Yes.
This reacting to one another creates a cycle.
Yeah.
When I take ownership of my part, I can be responsible or responsive versus reactive, and that changes the entire cycle.
Yeah.
That's
stop the hamster wheel.
Exactly.
That's good.
So that's how I see it.
That's good. Thank you, Mark. Looking forward to the next time we
chat. Look forward to it.
And if you guys have questions about any of this, we'd love to have your comments, whatever.
Yeah.
Just, you know, you can post that on any of our Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, whatever, on our website. We'd love to hear from you.
And we'll put that link up there.
That's right. All right. Have a good one.
Hey, thank you for listening to our podcast. If you like How I See It, please do all the things that podcasts tell you to do. Subscribe, rate, review, follow us, and or talk nicely about us on social media. If you want to reach out, the email is us@howiseeit.click. Yep, I said dot click, as in dot C-L-I-C-K. Please tell your friends about this show, and we'll see you on the next one.